This is a podcast from policyreview.tv.
Isabel, well, I think we've had four really tremendous and lively presentations. I know it's getting close to lunchtime, but we have got a little bit of time for questions. So same pack drill as before. We've got the roving microphones either side. And just to raise your hands, and the gentleman at the front's got in first again, so why not?
Michael Hatfield again, from Trent Valley Academy again, but one of my roles is as Aim Higher Coordinator, so one of my passions is about widening participation, not increasing participation solely, but widening participation. Now, one of the reasons I'm passionate about the diplomas is that they, to me, are a vehicle for widening participation. Clearly, in our consortium, diplomas have attracted white working class males, those entrepreneurial individuals, those students who are hard to reach in any other area, and they are moving them forward. Now, one of the problems with evidence-based stuff is evidence is open to interpretation. And one of the statements you made, which kind of worried me slightly, was the notion of the Russell Group universities, 80% of their acceptances are A-level students. Now, one interpretation is that schools are using BTECs. This is incontrovertibly true, by the way. Schools are using BTECs to increase their results. End of story. That is a fact. However, many schools, including ours, actually believe the BTEC style of learning, the diploma style of learning, actually suits certain learners better than GCSE level style of learning. And one of my question to you is that my interpretation is that some of these universities have not got to grips with the fact that there are bright learners who are certainly capable of achieving at degree level, but who need a different style of teaching and learning, a different style of experience. And if you are a university admissions officer and you don't understand BTECs and you don't understand diplomas, you're in the wrong job. So that's a statement rather than a question. Yeah. Would you agree that these are potential interpretations of the evidence?
That's just like those House of Commons MPs who get to the end and realise they haven't asked the question. But yeah, no, very good point. Mary first.
I think the first thing to say is I couldn't agree more that BTECs and diplomas and a range of other more vocational type qualifications suit a lot of learners and have a huge role to play in creating a more contemporary curriculum that young people can engage with who wouldn't necessarily engage well with GCSE. So I hope I didn't come across as being in any way anti any of that. I've spent, you know, a large part of my career actually promoting vocational, more vocational type qualifications. I'm just presenting you the evidence. Now, widening participation, if it's just about more of young people who have come from more deprived backgrounds going to HE, then, you know, that's one kind of widening participation. But there is also anxiety about the numbers of people from more deprived backgrounds going to more competitive, top universities, as they're called, or going at all. And the biggest indicator for people not being placed at the end of the cycle is having non-tariff qualifications. So there's a whole load of factors there, and some of them, by the way, that we will look at because we've announced recently that we're reviewing the UCAS tariff. And one of the things I want to be very clear about, you know, we've seen the cause and effect of the universities designing a qualification 50 years ago as the to support progression to the kind of degrees they were offering. And it has endured for 50 years, and it is still, my statistics show, the major pattern of progression to the older universities. I think what we want to see now is a new version of that, where there's a partnership between the types of degrees that are being offered and the types of curriculum that is and qualifications that are used to progress to them. So there's a bit of cause and effect. You know, I suspect that a BTEC's never going to be a great progression to a highly academic degree. And, you know, we have to understand that. But then perhaps some of the things we need to do around widening participation long term is marrying the two curriculum, the curriculum at higher education and the curriculum leading to it. I completely support that it's a better curriculum for some kinds of learners, including, you know, like Sue, I had a daughter who I just would have loved, you know, she was 1 year too late to do a diploma, and she would have, it would have suited her so much better than what she did. So there we are.
Okay, thank you. Dulles, you might want to say something on this, I think, too.
Yes, not so much about BTEC in particular, but I think one of the movements, if you want to call it that, that you might have come across recently of the past few years is the professionalisation of admissions in higher education. And actually one of the positive consequences of increasing efficiency in admissions in institutions is that you actually have fewer people needing to know and understand about the qualifications coming through. And so I think in widening participation terms, that's very positive, because you now have people looking at a whole cohort of applicants and understanding much more about what students are bringing. And of course, we hear in the press quite a lot criticism of institutions that are identifying people from a range of backgrounds and are trying to ensure that there are clear progression routes and things that these people have to do that might be slightly different from people coming from different both education and socioeconomic backgrounds. So I think that even though I probably painted an overly gloomy picture, I didn't really mean to, but in terms of widening participation, there is the potential for it to continue to work in the future. But I feel very strongly about the fact that people need to understand what people are offering. People need to have the data to be able to make those informed decisions about admissions policies for different routes that young people are coming through.
Okay, we're running out of time, so I want to take some other questions rather than going to all the panel on this one. Yes, lady just there.
Hello, I'm Kate Ambrosi from Croydon Council. It's a question for Isabel. How do qualifications demonstrate value for money?
Well, if you can tell me that, you'll help us a lot. What we're being asked, we believe, is that the cost to the economy of the development and delivery of the qualification should, to some extent, reflect the value that's added by the qualification. And the challenges to that are inefficiencies both on the supply side and on the demand side. On the supply side, people who actually deliver them. So, for example, usually in meetings like this, I get asked a lot of questions about the extent to which fees have gone up or the fees charged for resits. But there's also inefficient demand behaviour and the number of qualifications and the number of repeat qualifications that people are put in for. Do students really need to do 15 GCSEs? Is that educationally valuable? Who said? You know, so there's issues there. So we are looking in and trying to develop some evidence on that to try to show, because 80% of the delivery and development costs of all the qualifications we regulate are met in some way by the public purse. Even those that are actually not taken by students in state schools, there are ways in which the public has to pay for bits of it in the background. So there's a really important issue for this, look on our website and you'll see some of the stuff we're doing.
You mentioned that the Phase 4 diplomas have been accredited.
Yes.
So awarding bodies can offer them if they wish. They could rebadge them, or they could even put them out under the same name, well, could they? And would there be funding for schools and colleges, right, that wanted to do them?
There's two different things. One is whether they meet Ofqual standards, and they were already with us when ministers, right, decided they, yes, didn't want to support the use of these qualifications, yes, in state schools. So I think they are on the... If there is a demand for those qualifications, the awarding bodies will work up exams in them. I believe, and of course the independent sector is not bound by ministers' decisions on funding. The reason I just mentioned it is that what at least they've done is rescued the work that's already done. Mm. It's in a quality assured form, and there it is. And I know one or two of you have been involved in those, were saying that you'd like some of the strengths of that to be retained. Mm. So these things have been quality assured by us. But I don't want you to go away with the impression that they're going to be available all over the place, because that's partly, in reality, a decision for ministers.
And if they did come forward, a bit like the IGC up until now, there wouldn't be funding for state schools to do them. Is that right?
Well, that's a ministerial decision you'd have to put to ministers.
Yes,
that's,
yeah.
And just one other factual point, if I may,
yes,
Mike. At the beginning of the morning, Sue was referring, I think, to the worries about the support to the exam officers and the implications of the decision to close the QCDA on that. That is still under consideration by government, and with and we are, have a sideline observing role in that, about what the arrangements are going to be.
Yes.
So the importance of that support is fully understood, that it will not be a QCDA role, because there won't be a QCDA once the new legislation goes through, but that is still under consideration, and so it isn't a fait accompli.
And Catherine, we had a question about higher education awareness of dependence. What about amongst employers? What if anything can be done to raise the awareness amongst employers of you know, what's involved in the diploma, the learning styles that involve it, and so on?
Well, employers are like other parts of the public, aren't they? That often they're very risk averse and want to go with what's safe and what's familiar to them. So I think certainly in our area we've done things like roadshows and workshops, promoting diplomas with individual employers. But lots of real change like that with great sways of the public tends to take an employer having a positive experience, doesn't it? Through their own child or through somebody that they employ and bring through. So I think, you know, the change will be incremental based on their individual experience, but certainly there are lots of things that we can do to encourage that and have been doing, so the kind of publicity roadshows, etc.
Right. And without central government support for that sort of promotion, is that still going to happen, do you think?
Well, no.
No.
No point even elaborating on
no.
it. So,
okay.
No.
So really it's going to be down to schools and colleges to do what they can to raise awareness locally with their employers and
yes.
so on.
What they could do perhaps with education business partnerships as well.
Yes. Okay, thank you very much. I think that brings us to the end of this session, a very full session. Thank you very much for your questions. And can we just finish with a show of appreciation for all of our speakers? Thank you very much.